Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Games Premier Podcasting Now Trio, including Andrew Mahone. My name is Riley Holbert, joined by my good friends, Andrew Mahone and JW Kriwal. How's it going today, guys?
Are you doing really well, Riley? I don't know if I should take offense that Andrew now has supplanted me, in terms of
Was thinking I would
it's like,
alternate the order of the day of every week, keep it fair.
I mean, I guess, even like alphabetically, I should come first too, right?
What?
So,
Technically my first
Andrew,
name.
bro, what are you talking
Oh,
about?
I thought by last name, because usually movie credits and play credits and script writing credits and basically any
Really
content
just
creation
everything. Yeah,
credits.
really just everything.
Yeah, that's usually.
Attendance sheet.
I'm doing great today. I'm feeling confident, secure in
Yeah.
myself, feel like I'm kind of glowing, just
Yeah, well,
radiating.
I think part of that comes from putting me down a little bit. The boys were putting me down. They were doing a limitless page check on me and just absolutely bodying me.
There's not much to audit.
Well, hey, listen, scoreboard on the regional wins.
It's
I'm gonna
so
carry
true.
that
One of them is fake, though.
to the bank. Well,
That's not true.
that's
All regionals count. All regionals
Andrew, you need them to all count, so
Exactly. They all
But
count.
actually, I'm with you, Andrew. I'm feeling really good. And I entered this week with sort of a change in my mindset. I had a really chaotic time getting back from a wedding this past weekend. And was like got back to my apartment at like 2 a.m. And I realized in that moment that it's not worth it stressing over stuff. Everything's cool and chill, and I found my zen, and it's really the culmination of an arc that started with the rainbow on Mount Fuji, and it's ended with me being completely zen at all
Wow,
times.
incredible.
Yes.
That's
Yes,
amazing to
Riley.
hear.
So I'm just going
Yes.
into every day just knowing that it's all going to work out every day, and it has yet to prove me wrong this week. Like, I've
Good
had a
for you,
lot of
bro.
stressful things going on, and it has 100% success rate of like going the way I want it to. It's just
That's what
nuts.
I'm talking
I'm
about, baby. Let's
manifesting.
go. I love to hear that. Oh,
So
amazing.
I'm
Stress
feeling
not
great
worth
this week.
it. Not worth it,
It's
man.
so true. So, I found my inner peace.
JW says, shaking his head,
No, I'm not shaking my head. I'm just like, I wish I had that.
No,
I do have
I
that
know.
sense of
I
calm.
wish I had
I do have a sense of
that.
calm, but maybe not a sense of like screw it energy. Like it seems
It's
like.
not screwed energy. It's true belief that things are going to go okay.
Okay.
Like genuine in my heart of hearts. Yeah.
Yeah,
for
It's
sure.
a good
I
place to
figure if
be.
Andrew and I could manage to not freeze to death on that mountain. That subsequent things could not be as dire as that. And therefore things are going to work out, you know?
Yeah,
You
man.
know, other people much less prepared for life has have made their way through just fine.
That's what I'm
That's true.
saying. That's what I'm saying.
That's true.
And we embodied that. So
Yes.
well, in the spirit of preparation, there was some enormous news from the play team at Pokemon regarding regional schedules. We have the entire regional schedule before the first regional, which is so mind-blowing to me. I've been playing the game for 13 years. I don't think that's ever happened.
And let's not forget the international championship schedule as well, which is usually the dates that they're particularly close-lipped about for whatever reason. And let's also not forget, as a little nugget they threw in there, there is no longer an Oceania International Championship. It's just fully nixed. When I first saw the list and it wasn't on there, I'm like, oh, they're announcing it later. And then I
Announcing it
read
later. Yeah.
the blurb that was in there. They're like, no, we are specifically getting rid of it. That's just so nuts to me. I like, what?
Do you feel like three ICs is enough? Like, we've had a four IC schedule for a while. Do you feel like there's an absence in the circuit without OCIC and it not being replaced by another major tournament? I mean, I
Kind
guess
of.
it's not.
It's
I mean,
this
it's
weird
how.
gap in the season, you know, around like February where nothing's going on. But
The
is
only
it
thing that
bad?
I think is a little bit strange is that, I mean, I feel for players in Australia who have a tough time just playing and competing. I do. And that's unfortunate. I mean, I really wish that there were just more opportunities for them to play. I mean, but the country, it's just hard. It's hard to play in. I mean, in Australia, there's nothing going on in the middle of Australia. Everybody lives on the coast. And even getting from one, you know, side of Australia to the other side of Australia is like apparently not very easy. So, you know, so it's tough. And after visiting a place like Japan, where everything is so crammed and everybody lives so close to each other, it's just like, oh, trading card games are born here. And this is why. It's because they're all so close. And this is why they don't play the Pokemon trading card game live or even have any digital client for their game, because
they don't need to.
They literally do not need one, right? Like, they all could just get together and play whenever they want. So you kind of realize from that perspective, the rest of the world, it's very hard to emulate that. And you know, figuring out logistically what makes the most sense. I think OCIC is kind of just a, I don't, you know, want to say explicitly this, but it was kind of like a rich kids internationals, right? I mean, it was just like the tournament that people would fly out to and spend boatloads of money to go and just basically farm championship points there. And and so now with it being gone, I'm conflicted. I'm like, in some ways I feel for the people who live in Australia, but then also I'm kind of like, ah, well, thank God they nixed that, you know?
Yeah, I will say there's like a weird burden on like the quarter structure, if that's still a planned thing for this season, where now there's this lack of an international championship to pay out for the quarter. But yeah, generally I agree. Like, for the layman player, it had this, it was like this weird barrier to entry. Like, if you're on the cusp of top 16, it's like that was the closeout for you, whether or not you could go to OCIC many times. And
it's basically Piper's, like, Piper got, you know, kind of like blocked out of top 16 because she couldn't go to tournaments like OCIC, right?
Right. And like, even outside of the like fiduciary costs, there's also just the like the time sink that goes into going to a place like Australia for like the layman player in Europe and North America. So I don't know. I could see why they got rid of it. I agree, though. I feel most strongly about the people in that region who now have three regionals announced. Very sparse locals from what the players from the area are saying, and no international championship. Like, how, it seems incredibly challenging to viably get an invite to the World Championship if you live in Australia or the surrounding area. I feel like maybe they should get like more special events or something like that to kind of like compensate,
you know,
for the local scene.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that certainly seems like a model that Pokemon has, you know, I mean, certainly exhibited somewhat in the past, right? Where we're seeing more special events in these places that are kind of Pokemon deserts. And that's not to say that, you know, we have any information that that would change, but, you know, certainly we hope so, because there are a lot of great players in Australia and those surrounding regions. And, you know, it'd be great to have them represented.
What do you think about Australia? I mean, like, what if Australia could be brought into like the Asia Championship Series? Like, it almost seems like it's tough. I feel for TPCI having to manage Australia, right?
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, like, logistically, it's a really tough area to create organized play for, I have to imagine, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, sometimes, you know, you read like the threads by people who are participating in some of the fringe Asian Championship Series, and it seems just really challenging and like really limited who they give invites to in those areas. You know, usually it's like predicated on one or two tournaments. So that's like not a super feels good scenario. It doesn't always feel like, you know, you could be one of the best players in the world, live in Australia or one of those countries, and whip your invite easily any year if it comes down to just one tournament. So I don't know if I love the system that those other regions have. I will say, like, Pokemon does still have on their website that they have like dates, locations, formats subject to change. I doubt they'll invoke the latter two of those, but like, they could add more events is also a qualifier they add. So, you know, for example, there's no events in June in the United States. I don't necessarily anticipate that to be the case by the time the whole season is complete. Like, I would expect like a Wisconsin regional or another like West Coast regional to be in that June timeframe, like there is almost every year. So I don't know. I really hope that there's more events available in Australia just for that accessibility perspective. But I do like largely agree. I don't know if like from the macro perspective, if I liked what OCIC added to like the competitive circuit globally.
Yeah. On the topic of OCIC, talking about the other ICs, how do we feel about locations? Obviously, NAIC no longer in Columbus. It had a good 4-year run. Now moving to New Orleans. You have London for EUIC. I mean, I know you guys were talking about maybe heading over to Europe for that tournament. So what are your guys' thoughts on some of the other locations for the other internationals?
Yeah, I'll let Andrew speak to London. I know we've been personally hoping that it was outside of London. I do think the move for NAIC is pretty cool. You know, I'll say like typically it sort of logistically made sense that NAIC was in the Midwest just because of the volume of players that exists in the Midwest. So it makes it super drivable for a pretty large player base. New Orleans is a really cool area, though. I think it'll be fun to be there. So, you know, I appreciate that we're trying to make it in the same way that like EUIC like travels around Europe and is almost like a celebration of Pokemon organized play in that region. It feels cool to me that NAIC is shifting around. New Orleans is also, I'll say, like generally more accessible by air than Columbus is. Like it's significantly cheaper for me to fly to New Orleans, which is a gripe that people have had about Columbus for years now. And something I certainly am looking forward to from a wallet perspective. You know, Columbus is near to dear my heart as a Ohio State graduate, but I think it's a good idea to pivot it around.
Yeah, I'm really amped that we're going to New Orleans. It was actually a city that I had talked to Natalie about that I had just wanted to visit, have never been. And sure enough, here we go. It just is a great opportunity to get to travel there. And for me personally, I mean, I'm more excited to go to New Orleans than I am to go to London again. London's fine. I mean, it's fine. I love the convention center there. Everyone speaks English, you know. It's just super easy breezy to go in, you know, have some very mediocre food, and then, you know, whatever. Easy to get around. It's totally fine. They got trains. They got public transportation. That's nice. And it's easy enough to navigate. So I got no problem with it being in London. The venue is very nice. And I think, so tweaking my expectations and like not every event for me needs to be like this big, you know, life-changing trip where I'm like, oh, I need to have an experience there.
Yeah.
And for EUIC, I'm totally fine with that just being a championship point grab. Like, I am going to fly in. I am going to go to the convention center. I am going to play my deck and try to get some championship points. And then I am going to leave, right? And that's totally fine to have some events that are just that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not every event should be that, especially if you're going somewhere cool that you've never been before. And for some people, this will be their first time in London. And that was me last year, and I had a great time, and I got to explore around a little bit. You know, when EUIC was in Germany, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I need to, like, really kind of make sure I get around, and actually it was my first time in Europe, right? But now it's like, okay, if I go to London this year, it's going to be a fly-in, fly-out situation. But for New Orleans, I've never been. I might want to go and actually kind of, you know, explore around more for NAIC this year than I do for EUIC. And I think that that's totally okay.
My one thing is, and it's not really a gripe about London in particular, is they've now had 3 major European international tournaments in a row, if you count the World Championship in London. So I think it'd be cool to like give some exposure to other European countries. Maybe they have a deal with Excel Center.
I almost feel like it's like a logistical thing. Like it's just working. So they're just like, run it.
Also, like the center is huge. Like you said, the venue is great and it's huge. So like it can accommodate the amount of people that are going to these events now. I almost feel like what they did for like Frankfurt, like I don't know if that would work with how big these internationals are getting.
Yeah, so, it's really
logistically like that's also an important factor besides just like getting convention center deals is the actual size and capacity of the
talk about logistics. Let's pivot and talk about logistics, okay? 1,800 players for Pittsburgh so far. The RK9 Labs, we're doing the same registration process this year. I think I saw on Twitter that there's some bots that we're competing with now.
Oh, jeez. That sounds about right.
Yep, to register for events. And there's no signs of slowing down. So what do we think?
I guess bots were an inevitability if it's like this first come, first serve deal. To be honest, I've never actually had an issue like getting myself registered for these tournaments as long as you go in like around the time that it opens.
Yeah. I will say the one time I was in second wave of NAIC.
Yeah, I was too.
You know, yeah. But that was my only time missing out. If I, you know, if I was there at the start, maybe it'd take a few minutes, but eventually we'd be able to get through. So yeah, on a personal level, it hasn't really affected me. You know, but obviously, yeah, if there are people taking advantage of the system like that with bots trying to register them, that's like, you know, wild to me.
You know, I get it, I guess. Like, if that's the way the system works, like, play your game, you know. You know, it makes sense to some extent.
Are you advocating for? Are you defending?
I'm not like I'm not endorsing it, but it like totally, that's like the logical conclusion of how it works, right? Is if it's going to be first come, first serve, the site's crashing, you need to refresh like and get in there as fast as you can. Like, of course people are going to do that with like a computer bot.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so that's what we should, that's what we should be selling, is the, you know, the $5 computer bot to guarantee registration
on Fiverr. Yeah.
Just insert your player ID, your email.
There you go.
Yeah. You know,
$100, I'll get you reg.
That's right.
That's so true. But the fervor is certainly there. You know, it seems like the game just continues to grow every season, and it's pretty incredible to see. And that's paired with a new increase in prize payout as well, right? Like, we now have more people competing for more money. Like, the game itself is like leveled up and evolved.
So for people that haven't been following what Riley's talking about with the prize increases, they've essentially doubled for every major tournament the amount of cash winnings that the top 32 will receive. So for winning a regional last season, and for most of the prior season since they've introduced cash prizing, it was $5,000. Now it's $10,000 for winning a regional on top of that automatic world's invitation. Similarly, for the international championships, they used to be $10,000 for winning. They've more than doubled those. It's now $25,000 for winning. And then, you know, obviously the tiering also is increased as you, you know, go down the go down the top 32.
Yeah, I mean,
and
nuts,
Worlds,
right?
Is 50k now, and it was 25k.
Yeah.
And for me, the big thing, so it's the top number has doubled across the board, but top 32 all of this last year and all previous years since 2016 gave out $250, right? And top 16 was $500, and top 8 was $750. It felt crazy that, you know, at first this made a lot of sense. I mean, if there's like 300, 400 player regionals, like whatever, that's fine. But, you know, when we're getting up into the 1,200 player tournaments and you're getting $250 for top 32, it's like, that's not even paying for the hotel, dog. Like, this.
Yeah. Yeah,
You know, this feels kind of bad. And then I'm not even going to get a comma until I get top 4. Holy smokes. So like, you know, so that is all more than doubled. I mean, top 32 was 250. Now it's 1,000, right?
Yeah.
Top 16 was 500. Now it's, 1,500? And you're getting $5,000 for top 8 or something, right?
Yeah.
At a regionals. So like, these numbers have all way more than doubled. Actually,
on the whole, right?
So, no, like, it's a really good point, and honestly, it's not something I paid attention to in a lot of
well
detail.
I think what this opens up is more of an opportunity for a fully competitive player on the circuit, right?
Yeah.
We've kind of talked about the the financial grind of playing Pokemon full time, you really have to rely on, if you're not, you know, frankly, Azul or Tord, or, you know, other like very small, select amount of players, you know, you're really relying on sponsorships, and you're really relying on like coaching, and you know, there's no real YouTube income to speak of for a lot of players. There's no real content creation income, but you're really relying on these kind of outside non-tournament income streams to try to fund how you're making it on the circuit and how you're funding all this travel and expense. So I think what this does open up, it allows players a little more breathing room. It makes a little bit more financial sense to say, hey, I'm going to fly across the world to go to a regional, or I'm going to fly across the world to go to an international championship. And that, I think, is going to overall make for more storylines. You know, it's going to make for more players that are able to go to more tournaments because they're, you know, realistically getting, you know, more money to be able to travel more. And it just means that there's going to be more players that are able to take advantage and go on the circuit and be kind of, you know, maybe not full-time players, but, you know, certainly like regulars at more.
Yeah, and I think that's more what I'm drawn to, especially with that sort of lower end payout, right, increasing so substantially. And again, like, I really didn't think about too heavily how significantly the lower end payout had increased. You know, it just makes it better as well for people who like are heavily engaged with the hobby, not trying to make a living on it, but like want to go to a lot of tournaments, like want to really be invested. Like, if you're able to pay for like a tournament or two off of one top 32, that's like a game changer, right? Whereas a $250 felt like chump change in the grand scheme of like how much you're expensing to like fly to these tournaments. $1,000, though, that makes a big difference. Like, that wipes off the complete cost of one tournament, maybe two, depending on, like,
if you're driving, you know, or flying,
or like the flight costs, or, you know, however much that might pan out. So, yeah, like, that's a big deal. I mean, that certainly would have been huge for me.
Top 32s now, like, you could just, you can bankroll a couple top 32s, and you're like, all right, I can afford a big trip now.
Yeah. I mean, I got multiple top 16s last year. You know how much I would have appreciated that $2,000? Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, looking at my 2023 season, like, I had a lot of top 32s and a lot of top 16s, and that would have gone really far.
Yeah, for real. That's a big deal. One thing I'm curious about, though, because this is on a lot of people's minds, mine included, is, you know, top 64 is still, you don't even get a booster box. You get half a booster box taped up with duct tape. No money. I'm wondering at all, do you think it would have felt better if some of that cash was distributed downwards towards like top 64, or at least getting a booster box or something? Like, it's so dissatisfying to me that you can get a really solid finish in a day two, you know, positive match record, clocking in at like, I don't know, like 28, 29 match points, and still not get anything
besides. Yeah, I think that's a little nitpicking. I mean, because this is a pretty, in my opinion, going from where we were to where we, but I will say, we've always kind of held the opinion that Pokemon should just be handing out product like candy at these events, right? Like, because it costs them practically, right? That's box, you know, and it's like, you know, and we don't want to ask for too much because they've given us a ton.
You get booster boxes, dog. Like,
that's what I'm, because a lot of players, like, to win a booster box at a regional would be a huge thing. You know, that would be like
value in that, right?
Their crowning achievement. You know, and that's not to take anything away from that. I'm just saying, like, the amount that it would cost Pokemon to give away booster boxes versus the reward that the player feels like they've received for winning a booster box is, you know, so
big. Is insulting. Yeah, it is. You know, getting your little wad of 16 packs, you know, after finishing 34th place, I want to go outside and throw them. Okay. Like, I don't actually care. Nobody's going to treasure these. they're not even going to, like, you're just going to rip them and whatever. At least with the booster box, you'd be like, all right, I'm going to put this in the closet. All right. Wait a couple years. Let it marinate. This $100 booster box will turn to three.
Yeah.
You know, at least exactly. A booster box is a piece. It's a thing. You could even keep it as a trophy if you wanted to. Like, this is the time I top 64 that regional. I got that booster box.
Yeah. It's like, it's sentimental to have a booster box. You know, it's a whole product. You know, you can't, a loose pack is nothing.
You know? Literally nothing. Unless you can't even sell them, man. They might be weighed.
Exactly. So, I mean, maybe you get something cool inside, but otherwise it's nothing.
I don't know. So, I take kind of some umbrage to that. I don't, you know, I have just like a whole box of loose packs and stuff that I've gotten from locals or regionals. And I mean, but it's fun though. I think it's like awesome. Like,
maybe you take them to like the local school and give them out to like the Pokemon club.
What you talk about? I got like some, you know, Plasma Blast and
Holy
Evolutions, some Fates Collide, that kind of stuff. You know, it's just pick up these random. I kind of like, you know, I'm not justifying it in any, you know, in any sense of.
I don't think you could argue though that even by purely sentimental value, like 35 loose packs versus one sealed booster box is. A massive, massive difference.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But congrats, you know, to
the future winners of the money.
Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, that's great. Like, to win a regional now, you know, is amazing, right? That sets you up for the rest of the season, like we talked about. It's just going to be this snowball effect. You win the first regional, you get your invite. Like, hey, yeah, maybe take that trip that you were really a little bit cautious about doing so. Or even, again, like, we're talking about the distribution and how significant it is down through the top 32. Like, you know, players, I think, are going to be a little bit more regular there at those major events. And that's good for the growth of the game.
And talking about top 64 money real quick, because this is a big hot topic. A lot of people are like, oh, I love the change. They should give top 64 money. I don't think that they need to or should. I got two top 64s last year at regionals. I didn't feel like I earned anything. I felt like I failed at those. That's me personally. I get it for some people. That's going to be a bigger finish. But still, keep in mind, top 32 was $250. Like, even if you're on the borderline between top 64 and top 32, if you get one top 32 out of three regionals that you attend, or if you previously would have gotten three top 64 or three top 32s, you're still going to outperform that. Yeah. That one, you know, with the one, you're still going to outperform. So even just chase that one top 32 finish. I think, like, when it comes to other activities, sports, games, things like that, I'm not expecting to get paid for 36th place. I'm not expecting to get paid for 50th place. Like, I think a lot of people just want money for some reason because the hobby's expensive. But you know, top 32, I feel like it's a good cutoff. It makes sense. And
for whatever reason, product. People want money.
Yeah, for some reason, people want handouts these days. All right?
The most insane take.
Analysis here. Yeah, I kind of agree with you. All said and done, and that is a good point, right? Like, that one top 32 is better than three would have been the year before, and it's kind of more than four because, you know, the expenses of going to four regionals would start to outweigh, like, you know, going to one. So totally makes sense. And at the end of the day, like, I think Pokemon players just need to get over the sentiment that day two in of itself is like something that's worthy of a reward as much as like it is the next phase of the competition.
Well, and that's another point that I wanted to bring up as a snowball effect to this. Just again, for anyone listening, like, please do your, you know, do as much as you can to ensure that you're not, you know, tying rounds that you shouldn't, that you're getting the maximum amount of points. I think especially this season, like, I do not want to see any players at 6-2 ID their last round, because I will not, because the stakes are so much higher. The stakes have doubled. And we talked about this last season of like, okay, if you want to win the tournament, like, you never ID in the last round because a 6-2-1 record. And it's the same thing here, but additionally now, like, the prize payout is so much more.
Exactly.
I mean, seriously, right? Like, a top 32, a top 32, you come out of a top 32, you get your bag, you get your $1,000. Like, that's a good tournament, right? Yeah. Like, we're all coming out of that.
Bit of a top four previously.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So I do not want to see anyone that follows this podcast get into a situation where they're at 6-2 and ID their last round, because that, you know, there's so much on the line now.
And I just want to preempt the counter argument, like, oh, you know, well, I don't have to try to win anymore because I can get top 32 and get money. So actually 6-2-1 is like acceptable. I see where you're coming from, but also 1800 people are registered for Pittsburgh. So keep in mind how many people are coming in with those 19 match points, and really ask yourself, are you going to outclass like all 100 other of them? 110, 20 other of them.
I'm thinking 200 player day twos, dude.
Yeah, like we're gonna, these day twos are gonna be so big. Do you really have that much confidence? And if you do, then why don't you just beat your round nine opponent, which will probably be your easiest round of the next seven?
Right, right. Yep, completely.
Just statistically
agree.
Speaking, it'll probably be one of your easier rounds of the next seven.
Yeah, and people have different, people have different goals. People have different, you know, end games here. But again, the prizing has more than doubled in some cases, doubled at the top. It just doesn't, it makes even less sense now than it did last year to ID into day two.
And with championship points, what? You're 5-3, you're probably still going to get your, what, top 256 or whatever. You're going to get some championship points for that. So,
talking 6-3?
6-3, yeah. You're getting, you're getting CP at 6-3.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. That's what I'm saying. You're getting CP, so.
Whatever. And they also, like, have the lower payout thresholds now as well, so like in terms of CP, so yeah, you're getting something, you know, at 6-3.
Yeah, yeah. So in any case,
6-2-1 and getting that same thing and playing 6 more rounds.
Yeah. How many regionals you guys going to? You got on the books?
Let me pull up my notepad.
I have Pittsburgh, Peoria, Toronto is probably the early ones, and then kind of, you know, feel those out from there, see where we're at. Knoxville seems reasonable. So Orlando is an easy one to get to, and then obviously Indy is 2.5 hours away, so it's probably between 4 to 6 for me.
Yeah, I'm skipping Peoria and Sacramento, and I may be skipping Toronto if my girlfriend's boss does their crazy Halloween party again, because I would want to be at that. But after Toronto, I basically, I'm planning to go to all of them besides Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go, nice. Baby. I got Pittsburgh and Peoria. I don't know if I got signed up for Sacramento.
Got to ask Natalie.
Got to ask that. ask Natalie. Ask my wife if I'm signed up for that one. Hey, Natalie. Yeah, well.
Next that's episode. A maybe. Yeah, that's a next episode angle.
Yeah, and then Toronto. Yeah, I'm going to try to go to. For me, I'm in a pretty cool situation because my wife works for Full Grip and she vends a lot of these events with Full Grip. So any event that Full Grip is going to and vending, I get a free hotel room because I can just stay with Natalie, who's going with the shop and gets a room paid for. So like, you know, any of those events, like, I'm just going to go because I got a free room. And then it's like, okay, all I have to do is get myself there, which is, you know, a significant, you know, decrease in cost. So I'll go to, like, all those. And I'm looking at, like, you know, similar to Riley, I think, like, the back half for me, depending on what I need, I'll probably just go to whatever I need to go to, even if it's Vancouver. I mean, I loved Vancouver last year. That was sick.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Vancouver's not completely off the table for me, but the other ones I feel like pretty confident I'll be at.
Yeah, the big miss for me, like, I probably will skip Portland this year. That, you know, maybe I don't go to Sacramento, but but other than that, I'll probably go to most of them.
Well, very good. I think it's about that time in the episode, Riley, that we thank our sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, the sponsor for this week's episode of Tag Team is none other than Manscaped. And let me tell you, JW, Manscaped comes in so clutch. I was at a wedding this past weekend, and being able to carry around not only my Boxers 2.0, which, you know, are in my carry-on, but the Beard Hedger 2.0 has been so clutch for me, being able to like have a portable solution to trim down my beard without getting rid of it completely is so, so nice. The adjustable razor, I literally bring it like everywhere I go because it's so good at what it does. And I can't recommend it enough. Like, I seriously endorse this product. Plus, the Boxers 2.0, you know, they're helping me out on the dance floor, giving me that flexible energy to really impress all of my girlfriend's friends.
So, absolutely.
JW, I know you feel similarly in terms of how effective and awesome those products are. And yeah. I know you also use the lawnmower. Sure. You know, we're all fans of the products here on Tag Team. And the cool thing is, if you're interested in them and any of this pitch sounds appealing, we got some news for you. You can head on over to manscaped.com. Once you're in there, throw a couple things in your cart that appeal to you. Maybe the boxers, maybe the beard hedger, maybe the lawnmower. And then when you're at checkout, here's the crazy thing. You can use code TAGTEAM at checkout for not only 20% off, but free shipping. JW, does that sound like a good deal to you?
Sure does, Riley. So why don't you guys head on over to manscaped.com? Get yourself a few nice things. You maybe got an event coming up that you want to look really good at. Obviously, we got regionals coming up that you want to look your best and feel your best at. So head on over to manscaped.com. Use code TAGTEAM over there at checkout. Get yourself 20% off plus free shipping. It's hard to find a better deal than that. And you get to support the boys here on the cast.
Thank you so much to Manscaped for your ongoing support of the cast. And thank you so much to you all for checking them out and making this a sustainable partnership. All right, JW. So with Manscaped thanked, we're now officially in the latter half of the cast. Andrew, JW, we've been talking about highlight reels, things to really call out to wrap up this season. And we landed on sort of three main pillars. We talk about the player of the year. We're going to talk about the card slash deck of the year. We'll all give our own input to each of those. And then finally, we'll give the most overrated archetype of the year slash overrated card of the year. So I think let's start from the bottom and work our way up on that list, because I think they're more exciting as you go upwards. So we'll start with the overrated deck and archetype of the year. I have pretty strong opinions on this one, actually, and I think blazing into first place as the overrated card slash archetype of the year is any form of Arceus V-Star deck. I think Arceus V-Star came in as the star from last year, having won the World Championship, having won NAIC, and it really did not put up over the course of this year. You look at the international championships, Arceus was not winning outside of Alex's win in London. Even then, even against the odds, though, Tord still almost won that matchup.
Probably was, should, arguably.
Yeah, like Tord like really was whooping in that matchup. And Arceus had so many chances.
Won NAIC too.
I know, and still it couldn't put it away. And like I think when it comes down to it, like Arceus was consistent, but its stopping power was not what it needed to be to really be a consistent tournament winning deck. Like it could pop up here and there, but it was not a tournament winner all said and done. And I think people highly overrated like Arceus path strategies over the course of the season. I think they're flimsy and weak and not worth pursuing. And I think the card, it had its heyday last year and it just doesn't keep up anymore.
That's interesting that you say that, because I think it also won a few other regionals, though, right? Like it won...
It won the Arceus Giratina
regional. Portland, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think, like, you look at the season in aggregate...
Kind of the last, and especially the latter half of the season.
You had, like, the Lugia era. Arceus was not showing up during the Lugia era outside of, you know, the one Arceus Giratina showing. You had... Actually, no, that was post-Lugia era. That was post-rotation, wasn't it? You have... Yeah. The sort of Lost Box slash Giratina era Arceus, I don't think won anything in that period. Or no, it Arceus Gudra. But that was a really weird top eight that had four Regigigas in it. So.
I think, you know, we're talking about is what deck is overrated. So in order for a deck to qualify, it has to be thought highly of, right?
Sure, sure.
And so we have to just think it's thought too highly of. And for that... I would 100% agree. I cannot remotely conceive why people thought it was a good idea to play Arceus at a lot of events this year. But people, my God, they kept bringing it. It seemed like to me it was always one of... whenever I'm paired up against Arceus, I'm like, this is awesome. Because that's like the worst deck that people think highly of is Arceus. So I was usually pretty stoked. They're not going to do anything crazy to me. I can always play out of it just by, you know, doing more damage or, like, I don't know, being a better deck or countering Path at the right time. You know, there's always options. And then you always feel like you get sacked when an Arceus deck does inevitably beat you. So. They went first. It definitely felt like they had to go first if they wanted to have any.
It feels like Arceus's really selling point over the course of the season, especially towards the end, was that it was good against, like, Lost Box decks. And I just don't think that was enough of a sell with how diverse the meta was to, like, really make it as big of a part of the conversation as it occupied. GW, you look pensive, so I feel like you disagree.
Well, no, I think I've always thought Arceus was a solid choice. We were somewhat looking at it adjacently for Worlds, just as being kind of a solid, you know, solid archetype. It did have its close finishes. You know, you think about Ian Robb at NAIC, and then, of course, it won EUIC. So I feel like it was always a deck that was kind of around the table. But I don't know. It's hard for me to really pinpoint, like, an overrated archetype because we had that kind of bisected... format in terms of the mid-season rotation or, you know, however you want to call rotation this year being, you know, not at the end of the season. But I don't know. So I'm trying to think of, like, well, what was a deck that was really overhyped that I felt like Caliber did not perform and is a pile?
That is an overrated deck.
What's that? Caliber. That's what I was going to say. That was the deck that came to mind. Like an overrated archetype. But I mean, and it's only like, okay, half the season or whatever. But that was the one that I was going to say.
Yes. I feel like Backstabber doesn't cross that threshold where people rate it highly enough for it to be overrated.
No, people do, bro.
I think the layman loves a Backstabber because when it was released,
they know it's bad. They do.
When it was released, it reminded me a lot of, you know, Reshiram and Zekrom. GX.
Yeah.
The tag team.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. Because it was just like, oh, you're going to blow everything up. You're going to deluge. You're going to get all this energy into play. And yeah.
Backstabber, like, hasn't even top cut anything. And people just keep playing it.
I know.
In their heart of hearts, they know the truth. They just like the deck.
They keep playing it, bro. Even Maridon, like, top 8 at EUIC, that's all you really needed to know was that, like, someone could do it, right? Backstabber has no such finish.
And it was, like, the first seed at NAIC or like, one of the top seeds, too. Still couldn't get it.
That's crazy.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, maybe it is Backstabber on... You know, Backstabber, to be honest, I wasn't giving it respect as the deck that was rated.
Yeah, and that's fair, right? And it's kind of a weird thing with our season in terms of, you know, the archetypes and, like, the rotation.
At Worlds, man.
Say Backstabber has an Arceus in it a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So really, I'm right.
There you go.
Yeah, all that to say, Riley is correct. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so... some disagreement, but I think those are both really solid conclusions, to be honest. How about the MVP award, the card and slash deck of the year? You know, Andrew, what do you think?
Mew VMAX.
Yeah.
Just won Worlds. Okay. It's got cards that keep being printed to try and nerf it. No other card in the Pokemon TCG that I can think of in recent memory has had 3 direct counters printed to try and take it down. You got Drapion, Mightyena, and Spiritomb.
Yeah, and I mean, you can even go so far as to also say, like, Path of the Peak as well.
Path, right? Like, so many cards come out, and Mew just adopts Mew just adapts and just keeps evolving and is able to continue being a consistent threat. It was a good deck all year. Decks like Lugia were really strong in the front half of the season but fell off after rotation. Mew did not, because it is such a simple concept that you all you need are some cards that can discard other cards from your hand. You got Genesect, you got Mew, you're rolling. You're totally fine. And it won the world championship. So my go-to is this was the Mew year.
And NGW. yet we kind of fell off.
We abandoned her. We abandoned her when she needed us most.
I know.
We left her.
Who could have thought, besides, you know, many of the top eight at Worlds. but I would say that the deck of the year, you know, and I think about deck of the year in the past years that we've done this, I've thought about the deck that has consistently just like not cared about the format, what is happening, what is rising and falling around it. It has answers to everything. And I think to an extent, Mew has that. I mean, it's certainly like a close contender for me there. But my card and deck of the year has to be Lugia V-Star. Think about the pre-rotation Lugia and just how dominant that was. Of course, Andrew Hedrick winning a couple of tournaments in a row with his Lugia deck. And then you had Connor Fenton winning with Lugia. It just seemed there was a time in that pre-rotation format where Lugia just seemed to, no matter what the format was, you know, dominating top eights and winning a lot of tournaments, major tournaments. So Lugia, fantastic card and just really fun too. We look at it as being very oppressive in the time period, but looking back as well, just being able to play all the Radiant Pokemon, you had all the special energy that you could play. It had all the tools to overcome any challenge that was presented to it. So I think Lugia is just one of those decks. I look at it like an ADP of just being able to stomp and demolish everything in its path.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are both really good answers. To me, there's only three decks that you really are even considering for this conversation. You're considering Lost Box, you're considering Lugia, and you're considering Mew, right? And no one else really qualifies for deck of the year status, in my opinion. To be honest, when we came up with this topic, I originally went in with the intention of saying Lost Box. I think the impact that Comfy has had over the course of this format was astronomical. It kept up in the Lugia format, which is a statement in of itself, and it has pretty much completely dominated the headspace of players, right? Like, not everyone played Lost Box at every tournament, but you always were starting your testing with Lost Box. And I think that is a testament to, like, the kind of deck that Lost Box is and how big of an impact it's had on the game. That said, I'm actually a little bit swayed by Andrew's arguments. And I think Mew actually makes a really solid case for itself. I think Lugia, I could see why you'd say that, JW. I think the reason I land on Mew is, A, Mew is there the whole format. You know, it was there the whole year, start to back. And it consistently put up the entire year. Every tournament, there was a new counter introduced to Mew. And consistently, Mew showed up in top 16s and top 8s. It was winning tournaments the entire year, in spite of those counters showing up in droves. And so when you talk about like a deck that doesn't care, like, isn't that just Mew, right? Isn't Mew that deck that doesn't care? It has responded. The answer has been printed and Mew has responded over and over and over again. And I think Vance Kelly being the world champion, I encourage everyone to pop open Vance's Limitless page and look at what he's done this season. It is entirely with Fusion Mew.
This is
He played Fusion Mew this season and
the entire season.
Yeah. He got some scrappy finishes along the way. He got a top 16 at Fresno and he won the world championship. Like, to me, that is like the embodiment of what Mew has done this season. Vance, in some way, is like the perfect character to have won the world championship because he has been a believer in the Mew year from start to finish. He didn't abandon it like we did, and it paid off when it counted the most.
And we knew we could play Mew the entire season to a world championship invite. We knew we could. We knew we could, and we even halfway proved it. And then we got cold feet.
I think Mew would have rewarded us if we had believed in her the whole way through. I think that's, you know, going back to my mentality from the start of the episode, You gotta have faith, man. You gotta believe.
Like Vance did.
And Vance believed, and he won the world championship, and Mew is the deck of the year. Boom. Period.
There you go. Exactly. Not to mention, you look at the tournaments that happened in Asia, right? Oh my gosh. Every single Mew, every single one. Mew swept all of them. It's just all Mew, right? And then, you know, also getting a big regional win with Rowan and just countless other top finishes throughout the year. I mean, it, yeah, Liverpool regional championships, multiple regional wins, almost every, literally every Asia championship, I think. Like, Mew won it.
Right, like, what more do you need?
The little regionals in October back then. I mean, yeah, so it won two European regionals this year, too. Just insane. Yeah,
so your own, JW. You're bodied, you're destroyed.
Yeah, 2-1. Yeah, well, what else is new? The Wolves just keep descending on the poor, helpless... You Sheeple. Know, the poor helpless
yeah.
lamb.
Yeah, because yeah. you're a sheep, man. You're a sheep Lugia player. Instead of the wolf Lugia, or instead of the wolf Mew players.
All right, let's talk about the player of the year. I think for me, there are a couple of candidates, but I'd be curious to hear what you guys think about. But these are players.
Vance Kelly, you know,
Vance Kelly player of the year for sure. Let's go second player of the year, the runner up player of the year. But these are players that, you know, had big finishes, maybe consistently performed throughout the entire course of the year, big finishes in large tournaments, you know, really making names for themselves or solidifying themselves as the best in the game. Who are some of these players, Riley, for you that, you know, stand out just as having either really good accomplishments in this season or kind of, again, cementing themselves further as being the best players in the game?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of usual suspects this year, maybe more than like any other year. This has been one where the usual suspects have showed up hard. You got to start with Tord, right? Tord won in Peoria, which was the first Lost Origins tournament. He like really defined how Lost Box was played at that time. It has evolved significantly since then, but he came in hard with a consistent Lost Box deck, dominated very Tord fashion. He closed out his quartet of ICs, which is now no longer possible. So no one else can achieve that ever again, mind you, unless they've already won OCIC, I guess. Azul can still do it, I guess. But, you know, Tord was the only one to do it while it was still, like, ongoing. And he also just got second place at both EUIC and the World Championship. Tord really had a storied season, all said and done. And, you know, you'd kind of hear it in the commentary as well. Like, this was really a season that was defined by and around Tord. But I don't want to just focus on him because I think there are other players you can make an argument for. One of which that I want to give an immediate shout out to is Azul. Azul had a really, really consistent season. He wasn't always in top eight of tournaments. In fact, he had probably one of his like lowest frequency top eight hits of like any season in a while. But very consistently, Azul was in top 16 of tournaments. He top 16 at Baltimore. He got fourth at Salt Lake, top 16 at LAIC, top 16 at Ontario, top 16 in Texas, top 16 in California. Like, the consistency that Azul was showing up and racking up those top 16s, yeah, obviously you wish there were top 8s. I'm sure he does too. But he showed up really, really hard, and his group are the ones who really trailblazed with Lost Box. And, like, it felt like everybody was a step behind and just copying their previous list when looking to Lost Box for the next tournament. And they showed up one step farther at the tournament after. So obviously Azul isn't the only mastermind behind that. And he also, of course, got fourth at the World Championship, but he showed up really hard this season. And I think it minimizes his accomplishments if you only focus on like toward getting those firsts and seconds. Because Azul went crazy ham this season.
Yeah, and another thing I do want to bring up too, we're talking about these great players. One thing that is really impressive to me, and something that I try to talk about with newer players or players that I coach is that these players, by and large, are taking one archetype and sticking with it. And they might iterate on it. They might add a few cards here and there, just depending on how they feel the metagame is shifting out. But Azul, about half the year was on Lost Box, right? Up until the World Championships, had played pretty much exclusively Lost Box variants. You look at Tord taking pretty much exclusively Gardevoir to these major tournaments. And Lugia
before that.
And Lugia before that. You know, I mean, these, and Vance. I mean, we brought up Vance earlier, like, just slamming Mew the whole year. And that's, like, really admirable and very impressive. Like, you're seeing the results when you can get really deep into these decks. And that's not to say they had no other, you know, they were, you know, certainly all these players are weighing their options for other things that they might play in a tournament. But when you have that deep, deep matchup knowledge with one deck, it makes these tournaments and it makes their success, you know, that much more, I don't know, believable, right? Because they just have an understanding of what to do in every single situation. Nothing is really that new or fresh. And so they're not making decisions on the fly because, okay, they've practiced the matchup 100 times and they know exactly how to, you know, maximize their chances of winning. I think it's really, yeah, something that.
Think about Reagan, right? Reagan, yeah. With Lugia. I mean,
yeah, it's just, same thing, right?
And yep. Then at Worlds Plays Excalibur, I was like, dang, bro, like, no, Lugia was a fine call. At
a critical moment, he faltered.
You know, and then, you know, I got paired against Tord at Worlds, and then, like, he flips over Ralts, and I'm like, of course you're playing this. Like, I would have been mad if it was anything else, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, Andrew, do you have any other submissions? You know, we got Azul and Tord in the pool.
I came in ready to say Azul because of the consistency of his year, but then I pulled up Tord's profile, and now I have to say it's Tord. It is Tord. Tord is the player of the year. He had an incredible year. And I want to highlight something. To accomplish what Tord accomplished this year when the pressure and spotlight is already very much on you, I think is even more difficult than it is when maybe you're not the one being talked about at every single event. So huge kudos to, I mean, Tord and Azul. I feel like their names kind of get tossed around as like the two best in the game right now, and they are living up to it. And that's not an easy thing to do. Even talking with other, you know, great players like Caleb Gedemmer, right, who has never had a solid Worlds finish in the decade plus that he's been playing the game. It's like, that's tough, right? It's not easy. These kinds of, like, showing up and performing. Grant Manley, right, is another incredible player who I consider to be some, you know, one of the best players in the game, you know, and not having those kinds of results that Azul and Tord boast. It's tough, man. It's freaking tough. You have to get lucky to win events. You have to be playing the right deck at the right time, have the right matchups, and make all the right choices when it comes down to it, when it's game time, in the moment. It's such a difficult thing to do. And it's even harder when you bring the mental game into it and say, like, okay, now there's all this pressure because you've already succeeded. And now everybody expects you to continue succeeding.
Or
now
I'm going to have to do it.
And when your livelihood is predicated on it.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, and to still show up and do it with all that, it to me is just so incredibly impressive. So yes, it's Azul and Tord for me. The player I was most excited for this year was Michael Pramuat getting that top four Worlds finish. I was just so thrilled for him, you know, 7-time regional champion, longtime player, and someone who I consider a friend in the game and I've known for, you know, a while now. He's always been around in the Midwest, you know, just the entire time I've been playing. And to see him continue just absolutely destroying it, just he seems to do it so casually, right?
which is why
I love Michael Pramuat so much, because he doesn't seem like he gets all worked up like some of the other top players do. And just there's an effortlessness to his swag that is just very enviable.
I agree. I love Pram. I'm a huge Pram stan for sure. You know, it's interesting you say you compare the Limitless Pages and landed on a Torrid, because I actually think cross-comparing the two, I think Azul is actually more impressive. He has way more top 16s, way more reliable top 16s. He has like
big
a couple
big number means more to me, man. Nah, or the man. Little.
I mean, he has
my own season. I'm like, this is trash. There's not a single win on there. There's not a single second.
No, Azul has. Hear me out. Like Azul has the OCIC win. He has top four at a bunch of tournaments this year, and he has that reliable top 16. Like Tord got the second, the two firsts, and the fourth. But then his other finishes are like much more mid. After that, the Azul. So I don't know. It's the classic argument, like the consistency versus the versus the blowout, you know. Yeah. And I think
blowout every time, bro. Especially if it's four blowouts.
But Azul has like four blowouts as well, you know.
Oh, bro, the four finals, man, with two wins. Pack it up, bro. Azul's best finish Tord has, and he's got another.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's close. I think it's really close.
It's at least close, but then I forgot about some of Tord's. I forgot about the UIC.
You need to tie break this.
I forgot about a UIC, and then I pulled up Tord's page, and I was like, oh, holy smokes.
Yeah, I think it's Tord. I mean, right, I just would prefer.
I think Tord is an easy argument to make. Yeah. It's completely fair. Yeah.
I mean, it's like an impossible. You know, it's 1A and 1B, right?
Right. Yeah. I support the group decision. It's okay. You know, it's Tord.
Yeah. Easy choice.
Yeah.
Well, there have been a lot of great memories made this season. A lot of great decks to be played, and. Next week, we're going to be talking about ramping up for the new season. This kind of concludes this season of Tag Team. Next week, we will start the next season of Tag Team. That's very exciting and getting ready for Pittsburgh. I know I'm back into it. You know, I'm really like taking every, you know, moment I can, like, and just soaking it in every last tournament. You know, who knows, it might be the last one that I ever go to, but just, you know,
you said this every event last year, every single one, and he's like, I got one more in me, baby.
One last ride. Well, I will say, okay, so I bought a lot of merchandise at the World Store, and this was the first time that Anne has ever attended Worlds with me, and I think she's like starting to see like, oh, I get it. Like, it's actually a huge event, big production, a lot of things happen. And now, you know, the carrot's on the end of the stick for her a little bit. Like, hey, Hawaii sounds like a pretty good little vacation. I think we could maybe do that, you know, and
convincing your wife.
Buying, and then you can sell a lot of your stuff.
Well, and that's it. I've already plussed.
$1,200, man.
That's what I've already plussed on the World's merchandise. And, you know, now we're starting to eat into the flight costs, right? Of I've sold one of those jackets, crazily enough, for like an absurd amount of money. So she's starting to see like, oh yeah, they're not only can you do well and, you know, have fun and go hang out with friends, but hey, there might be some profits to be made here.
That could pay for itself.
Sure could. So
there you go. I'll tell you what, I was feeling a little fatigued last season. I feel invigorated with the prize pool re-upping. Honestly, it was very reinvigorating to me because, like, being able to start, like, paying for those trips back and plussing off a top 32 is really exciting. So I'm super amped. I could tell just by the energy, like, everyone's really excited right now about what's to come. I feel like the game is heading in generally a positive direction as well as, like, more and more cards come out in the Scarlet and Violet expansions. So cheers to a kick-ass season ahead of us, guys. I'm ready to have some fun.
Me too, brother.
Let's do it.
I think that's good a time as any to sing us off. JW, do you want to tell our awesome listeners where they can find us?
Absolutely. So we are big on the X app, formerly known as Twitter. You can find Andrew at Enjoy Friend. You can find Riley at Smiles with Riles, and you can find myself at Real John Walter. We do normally stream the podcast. That's going to be coming next week over on my channel now. I'm taking over some of the primary production responsibility. So that's twitch.tv/flexdaddyrighteous. Of course, Riley may also stream as well. He's over at twitch.tv/munner. And then Andrew has his own channel, twitch.tv/trickyjim, for all the best in Pokemon trading card game news and gameplay. So check us out over there on all those platforms. We thank you guys all so much for listening. And wow, this concludes another season of Tag Team.
A season behind us, a Poke and Tag Team alike. I'm feeling invigorated. I'm feeling ready to go.
The Triple Threat Tag Team.
That's right.
Going into 2024, baby. Let's go.
That's right. Thank you all so much for listening and your continued support. We're excited for what's to come. We hope you are all as well. And we will catch you around the corner. And with that, we'll see you next time. Peace.